From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Francisco.
Vallejo?
I'm from Redwood City, so I guess that's in the peninsula.
Coming up, we'll visit a recording studio that's training women and girls in all things audio.
Just seeing them with a microphone is just the most crazy thing to witness, and it's like the amount of energy that comes out of that is better than caffeine.
Then we meet a local Pakistani artist whose paintings reflect the colors and calligraphy of home.
If I get one person to say, oh my God, this is beautiful, then they have made a connection with me and my community.
And we remember one of the most publicized sexual harassment cases in U.S. history through a filmmaker's lens.
Anita really inspires us to think about that, you know, to think how one person can make a difference.
Courageous and creative women, today on Cross Currents. Picture a scientist in a white lab coat holding a test tube up to the light. Or a brilliant, bespectacled computer geek hunched over the keyboard, typing away. These are stereotypes we associate with people working in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. But there are a multitude of industries involving STEM skills that don't fit those stereotypes.
The Oscar goes to gravity. Skip, leave, sir. Leave it
here. Astronaut is off structure, Dr. Stone.
The sound design that you hear in the 2013 film Gravity was created by a team of audio engineers. And that's just what they are, engineers. They work with sine waves and electronics. They push buttons and turn knobs. But there's a stereotype there as well, that all this work is done by men. Some of this is based in fact. According to some estimates, 95% of all audio engineers are men. But that's changing. We continue our series on women in STEM with a visit to a San Francisco studio dedicated to teaching girls and women about all things audio. KALW's Jen Chien has more.
Hi, I'm Dory.
Hi, Dory.
In a darkened room, 12 middle school girls are watching a scene from the animated Pixar movie Finding Nemo. This isn't a slumber party. It's a class. The girls are paying close attention to the movie with their pens poised over notebooks. But what they're paying attention to isn't what they're watching. It's what they're hearing. When the clip is over, their teacher, Kelly Coyne, asks a question.
Great. So, I'm looking for raised hands for different sound effects you heard.
Water.
Water. Yeah, so when the fish were moving around in the ocean, was it silent?
No.
What else? There's something in the water that we heard a bunch.
Bubbles.
Bubbles, yeah. So different bubbling sounds.
Coyne explains how those bubbly, swishing water sounds help bring the story to life. The girls nod in understanding. After they learn about sound effects, they're going to add their own sounds to a cartoon.
Ooh, you guys can take turns being SpongeBob.
The girls here are students from a public school in San Francisco's Mission District, but this is a special off-campus class called Girls on the Mic. After splitting up into small groups, they gather around computer workstations to record.
It needs to be an input mode. So you see under dialogue, it has that I. That I needs to be clicked.
Oh.
Girls on the Mic is run by Women's Audio Mission, an organization dedicated to teaching the recording arts to women and girls.
We're in the control room of Women's Audio Mission, so we're the only professional recording studio in the world run entirely by women.
That's Terry Winston. She founded Women's Audio Mission 11 years ago when she was a professor of recording arts at City College. She first learned to work with sound as a musician.
You know, I'm an old punk rocker, so that's where I started out.
She's also an electrical engineer, or as they say in the biz, a double E.
Double E electrical engineering, sorry. That's
the insider lingo.
It's totally insider. It's funny because there's a lot of audio people that are double E's, so we bond over it.
Winston is part of a rare club. Women make up only a small fraction of all double E's. She's a self-admitted gearhead. She is really into microphones.
They all sound different. They all look different. different materials, different transducers inside. I mean, you can just, they're just like, it's like wine. You know, when people talk about wine and they're so obsessed, it's like, that's kind of how I am with microphones.
Winston knows her kind of obsession is still unusual for girls, but it's something she wants to see more of.
Girls are not socialized to be the gadget people. Just seeing them with a microphone is just the most crazy, empowering thing to witness. And it's like, the amount of energy that comes out of that is better than caffeine. It's incredible.
Winston says music and sound are perfect as a way of getting girls interested in subjects they might not approach on their own.
If we say we're going to teach you math today, or we're going to teach you science today, or the physics of sound today, you know, they're going to run for the hills. But if we say, okay, let's, you know, listen to this, you know, Rihanna song, and then let's break it down, and, oh, musical principles are based on math. Hey, this is 4/4, and this is how you count it. Sound is such a natural introduction to physics. And it's so easy to explain because analog technology is so easy to explain. The air moving is so easy to explain, you know, to a middle school girl. We love doing that.
The girls take their new physics and math skills and use them. They make sound for movies.
Okay, my turn.
They create their own podcasts.
Good morning, Bay Area. This is your fave news reporter, Rosemary, of Channel 2 News. Today, we have discovered that scientists in Washington, D.C. have discovered a new infectious disease, and the symptoms are meowing, biting people, and becoming a zombie cat. Now, I'm going
They even record their own songs.
Yo te di todo mi amor, pero lo echaste a la basura.
Terry Winston says unleashing creativity and thinking critically are just as important as mastering the technical stuff.
I think my science and engineering training, it really taught me to be a problem solver and to be really self-sufficient, and also to be very confident then that when there's a problem, I don't run away from it.
That can-do attitude is at the heart of Women's Audio Mission. Winston says there are a lot more women in the industry now, but there's more work to be done. She still runs into people who underestimate her just because she's a woman.
It happens all the time. But I think it happens just as much to somebody at Starbucks. Or, you know, I think it's a pervasive thing. We, you know, I chose to start Women's Audio Mission to focus on the thing that I knew really well. And I knew that we could change it.
How do you mute it?
Winston says that change starts from the ground up with these girls sitting in groups at recording stations. The next generation of brilliant problem-solving gearheads may just come from right here.
What do you do to press record? It's not just space bar, right?
It's command space.
Yep.
Ready?
No.
Yeah. Go. And go.
I'm friends with the monster, the sun of my bed.
On the mic, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We just heard how some girls are finding ways into career paths dominated by men. Sophia Sattar always had the support of her family to go into one of those fields, medicine. But she didn't want to do that. She loved to paint. But as a daughter of doctors in her native Pakistan, becoming an artist was out of the question until Sophia was ready for college. She asked her mother to put her through an expensive art school. Her mom thought to ask her father. That conversation went like this.
Sophia wants to go to art school. Would you pay for her fees? And he said, he didn't even stop. He was walking. He was walking across the room. He didn't even stop, did not look at me. He said, no, I will not. And he just... That's it. He was gone. And we were both just sitting there. My heart just stopped. And then my mother turned around and in a second she said, don't worry, I'll put you through school.
So Sophia went to art school and then moved to the U.S. At first, she wasn't sure what to paint in this new land. But when September 11th happened, she knew. She decided to create art that reflected her Pakistani heritage and Muslim faith as a response to the Islamophobia that she personally experienced. She went to the Academy of Arts in San Francisco and almost immediately landed shows in galleries around the Bay Area, including the De Young. I visited her studio in the garage of her San Ramon home to see for myself how she reflects her faith and her heritage through her paintings. So we just walked in the door of your studio, and to the left there is like a clothes hanging line with stuff hanging from it. What is this?
This clothesline is for me to hang my stencils. These are all handmade stencils. So I hang these up as to kind of save them because they kind of get ruined if there are some on the floor. But these are the big ones that I just fold up and hang across the walls. And this is my all my paint and my brush wash.
And tell me about what this is in front of us. There's this is a piece you're working on or you're finished with, and what is it? Can you describe it?
Well, you know what? I thought this was done yesterday, but I came in today, and as I spent the hour looking at my work, I decided, no, it's not done. The most difficult part for an artist is to decide when it is done. So today I decided it's not done. And up till now, if you ask me it's done, I really don't know. Maybe tomorrow, if I spend another hour with it, I will decide. So today I was working on this. I start with stencils. I just use stencils and I start working with the smaller elements, which are my stencils. And then I kind of work over them and layer upon layer of opaque, semi-translucent, or just transparent layers and build it up.
When you mention Islam or Muslims here in America, art is not one of the first things that comes to people's minds.
Yeah.
So do you feel in any way you are, you know, it's art, but you're also educating the masses?
Yes, yes, true. Because calligraphy is the is an ancient Islamic art form. When you say the words Islamic art, the only thing that pops up is calligraphy. It was an embellishment. It's not. It wasn't a religious preaching or anything. It was a decoration. So that decoration kind of continued on vases, on like cushion pillows. And I want to bring back that aesthetic of ornamentation in my paintings.
Okay, well, what music do you paint to? You said you paint to music.
I listen to Sufi music. There's a singer called Abida Parveen, and she sings about the praise of God. And I listen to her music while I'm painting. And there is one song that is like on a merry-go-round kind of thing. It just keeps on playing. I don't know, there's something about the words and the music that kind of I stay with it, and I kind of get a lot of ideas when it's playing continuously in the background. It is very beautiful. I mean, the verses are about being solitary and feeling alone in a group, and kind of trying to find and to discovering your identity.
When do you get the feeling that a painting, okay, that's it, this is final, it's done? When does that happen? Does that ever happen?
It does. It does happen. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's had this aha moment. So I keep waiting for that aha moment. Sometimes I work on a painting 6 months, 8 months, because I don't get that aha moment. So I wait for it. And that it's that apprehension, that it's the whole process. It's so, it's like, oh my God, I have goosebumps. It just excites me. When is this painting going to come around? So it's like a visit, right? When you have your best friend wanting to visit you. So you wait for her to come and you haven't met her for like years. So it's that kind of feeling that, okay, when is this going to come around? So it's never boring, never frustrating. It isn't.
Okay, is this one done yet?
No, I don't have the aha moment.
And the aha moment, what does it feel like in your body, in your brain? What is it? Can you describe that aha moment?
It's like, oh my God, it's perfect. That's what it is.
What do you want people to get out of your art? When someone looks at a painting of yours, what do you want them to get, to feel, to realize, to understand?
You know, my biggest achievement would be, and has been in my previous shows, that I want the Western viewer to appreciate. That's it. If I get one person to say, oh my God, this is beautiful, then they have made a connection with me and my community. And that's it. That's a seed I want to sow. I want that bridge. And I think that I'm building it brick by brick to bring the two cultures together. So that reaching out, if I can touch somebody's heart with my work, I don't want anything else. That's it.
Sophia Sattar is showing her abstract oil paintings at the Pleasanton Firehouse Art Gallery through April 7th. She has a live demonstration there tonight at 7 o'clock. We also have some of her work online at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Art has the power to bring you back home and can also take you back in time. That's what documentary filmmaker Frida Mock manages to do with her latest film, Anita, Speaking Truth to Power. It tells the story of Anita Hill, who testified during the confirmation hearings of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas in 1991. She accused him of sexual harassment. Frida Mock explains.
There was a lot of misunderstanding by the public of what she was doing in 1991. Why was she testifying? Why didn't she speak up about something that happened 10 years before? Because what she described in terms of her experience as an employee with Clarence Thomas as her supervising boss happened in the early 80s. And she made a decision not to say anything. And that, however, she was subpoenaed by Joe Biden, the chair, to come forward in the public hearing and to testify under oath. It's important to know she was a reluctant witness, and she was never intending to go public.
But very quickly, this case became very public as these nationally televised congressional hearings got underway. Here's a clip from the film featuring Senator Arlen Specter interrogating Anita Hill at the time.
You did not characterize Judge Thomas's conduct as sexual harassment when you gave the statement to the FBI, correct?
Senator, I guess I'm not making myself clear. I was not raising a legal claim in either of my statements. I was not raising a legal claim. I was attempting to inform about conduct.
I did find it shocking. What I got was questions that really weren't very well informed, on the one hand, and then questions that were hostile, on the other.
So that you are not now drawing a conclusion that Judge Thomas sexually harassed you?
Yes, I am drawing that conclusion.
Then I don't understand.
Pardon me?
Then I don't understand.
Well, let me try to explain again.
So that is Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania asking questions of Professor Anita Hill. Was this kind of the notion of the time that, you know, what are you talking about? What? What? Sexual harassment? What? It was like it was he was incredulous.
He was incredulous. And remember later on when Senator Simpson used the phrase to describe this, you know, these ideas as at one point, you know, we have to endure this sexual harassment crap. Mm-hmm. He said that word crap. It was shocking in one sense to all of us today that really saying, suggesting, how could you get a fair hearing if that were the state of mind of one of the judging, you know, senators?
And then it was Clarence Thomas's turn. And he said some memorable things. He said he is, you know, being stereotyped as a black man. He turned it into a racial issue. Here's a clip of what he said.
This is a circus. It's a national disgrace. And from my standpoint, as a black American, as far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks who in any way deign to think for themselves, to do for themselves, to have different ideas. And it is a message that unless you kowtow to an old order, this is what will happen to you. You will be lynched, destroyed, caricatured by a committee of the U.S. Senate rather than hung from a tree.
So that is Clarence Thomas responding to the allegations of Anita Hill back in 1991 before Congress. So, you know, he totally turns it into a racial issue. What does that do to the case?
It dramatically changed the hearings and, you know, really brilliantly placed the issue of, do you want to be involved in lynching a black man through these hearings? And, of course, no one wants to be considered be involved in lynching. So that framed the hearings in a different way. And the committee members backed away. I mean, there were women who were subpoenaed who were not called by Chair Biden who could have actually given testimony on the, you know, the pattern of behavior of nominee Clarence Thomas toward his employees, toward the women.
Who do you think should see this film? I'm thinking about my little sister who was born in 1991 and may not have heard much about the Anita Hill congressional hearings or how significant they were or what happened. Who do you think should see this film?
My hope is the younger generation, you know, who are the beneficiaries of what Anita did back in 1991, who are going into the workplace or might be going to college, and certainly those going into the military, there's a huge problem of sexual assault, that they will know that they have recourse. And this all started with the spotlight that Anita Hill started on the issue of sexual harassment, you know, 1991.
That's Oscar winner and UC Berkeley alumna Frida Mock, director of the film Anita, Speaking Truth to Power, which is playing at the Embarcadero Cinema in San Francisco and Shattuck Cinema in Berkeley. All the details are at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents. That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Maya DePaula Hanica, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Linda Ju, Christina Loring, Julia Scott, Charlotte Silver, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Our line producer is Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. This is Chrome Johnson from San Anselmo. Chrome Johnson will be twanging at the 19 Broadway Club in Fairfax on Saturday night, starting at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
And I'm done, 'cause I know I'll never see your face again. I'll never see tremble or tears fall from your eye. I've never had the heart to say goodbye. When I'm gone, I leave all of my memories behind. Well, these tears and a handkerchief is all. This is your life. I ain't never had the heart.